This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. The rate of anxiety is rising among college students. The National Institute of Mental Health says anxiety affects about one-third of adolescents and adults. Here in Connecticut, the State Health Department reports a decrease in the number of students who say that they're anxious who receive support over the last decade. Now, what's causing this anxiety? Today, we're focusing on the pressures on young people from middle school and beyond. How did pressure to get good grades or to be accepted into college impact you and your teens? Or were there other pressures on you while in school that impacted your life track after high school? Coming up, we'll speak to a psychologist and a school guidance counselor about the factors that impact adolescents today. Also, how much of this anxiety is parent-driven? You can join our conversation. Here's the number, 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, at Where We Live, to understand the trends seen around the country. Joining us by phone is Dr. Mary Alvord. She's a psychologist and clinical fellow with the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, and she also has a nonprofit called Resilience Across Borders. We'll learn about that in just a little bit. Dr. Alvord, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us, are students today reporting that they're feeling more stressed? What are the trends?
You know, I think there is a great amount of stress. The good thing is I think that we are more aware and there's less stigma in terms of discussing it, but I think there are tremendous pressures. School pressure that I think somewhat is imposed by families and children. They're applying to more and more colleges, and it's just on this cycle of, can we do more? Can we build up our resumes? You know, not just belonging to numerous clubs, but being presidents. And this also leads to often less sleep. And we understand that sort of the basic bodily restoring sometimes suffers because we're just doing so many things. And when you have less sleep, you're more prone to be irritable. You have more difficulty with concentration, and sometimes it's harder to make good choices. So I think there are multiple factors that play a part.
When we think about anxiety, can there be healthy anxiety, and when does it cross over to what's harmful, Dr. Alvord?
Yeah, that's a really excellent point. So a certain amount of anxiety and worrying helps motivate us, because if we think about, you know, the test tomorrow or the project that is due, we get a little bit anxious about it, we worry about it, but it motivates us to get the work done. It drives us. However, it crosses over to unhealthy anxiety when in fact it prevents us from doing what we need to do. And, you know, we get stuck. You know, we talk about also anxiety at that level when we what we call catastrophizing, and we think the worst case scenario, and it just builds up in our minds with what we call self-talk, you know, what we say to ourselves in our heads, but we can build these up. And that's when it gets in the way. So we really need to look at how much is a little bit of anxiety to help move us forward versus stepping over into that realm when it actually prevents us from moving forward.
When we think about anxiety, is it at times, could it be a learned behavior? So if you grow up and you have very anxious parents, does that kind of feeling then translate to children and how they learn to cope or maybe not cope with situations that come up?
I do. You know, parents are models. So they model how to problem solve and how to cope. And I think there's also a genetic component to it, but I think so much of it is learned, and which is why, you know, I've really devoted years to working with teens to figure out how can we get those thinking habits and develop better coping mechanisms. And often parents can learn along with their children and their teens to do that.
This is Where We Live. On the phone with me, Dr. Mary Alvord, psychologist and clinical fellow with the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. Today, we're talking about the pressures that are on adolescents and teens and young adults. And where does that anxiety and stress, where does it come from? What are the factors contributing to those feelings of being over stressed today? If you're a young person that thinks back to when you were in high school and the pressure that was on you, again, to either fit in or to get certain grades, even to get into what's considered the quote-unquote dream school, you can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. Dr. Alvord, you mentioned that you've been working with teens for many years to help them deal with, you know, feelings of anxiety and depression. But I'm wondering, you know, we focus a lot on, at least in popular culture, many of us are connected to our phones, our tablets, the presence of social media. How has that contributed to the way children interact with others and the way they feel about themselves?
Well, I think it's a really important topic because they're all connected. You know, even kids in elementary school often are walking around with smartphones, and they are privy to news as it happens and globally. So not only are we affected by what is going on in our friendship group as a teen or even at our school, but now it's all of the schools. And I think that just creates a lot of stress. The other, in terms of their interaction, is that it can be a positive. If you're socially anxious, it might be a great way to communicate because you're not doing it in person. And so it might be easier to text someone or email someone or put out an Instagram to try and connect. On the other hand, there is an expectation that you're included. And what I see are so many kids who are feel left out because there was a chain and they were not part of it, or they find out about a party or something like that. And so there's pros and cons, but it's certainly a very part of our everyday life.
So for parents who might be listening right now, what kind of advice or suggestion do you have for them and how to navigate social media use? Because at a certain age, children, you know, they want their own phones, and they right. are then going to be having these certain apps that we can't always be reviewing. I mean, what's the best way to navigate that?
You know, I think it's discussion. I think that communication is the key because while many people talk about limiting use and, you know, not allowing certain sites, which is appropriate to a certain extent, I think you have to talk with your teen particularly or your middle schooler about how are they using social media, what are they using, what sites are they looking at, and have a conversation so that they can show you some of what they have learned. I mean, I can't even keep up with the number of new apps that come up and new social media sites that they do. And I, as a psychologist, will ask my patients, you know, what sites do you frequent the most? What do you like about them? What do you not like about them? How does it help you communicate with your friends or even with your parents? So I think it's the communication is key. It's, you know, in what context are they using it and for what purpose are they using it?
When we were thinking about this show, one of our interns actually pitched it because she remembers how she felt growing up. And at times, you know, we have to realize we can't always be happy, but learning right. how to cope again with what life throws at you. I'm curious if you could talk about the work that your nonprofit does and just considering these what they call factors of resilience.
Right. So, I've been interested in the whole field of resilience, which now spans many decades of research, looking at what are the factors that help us cope, because we don't want to just cope in the moment. We really want to, as parents and as individuals, we want to build ourselves so that we can deal with whatever life brings us. And, you know, lately the school shootings have added a lot of stress to teens as well. But, you know, one of the key protective factors is being proactive, which means taking initiative. If something is not going your way, think about what aspects can you control, what can't you control, and perhaps, you know, do something about the what you can control is either accept it or take some action. And so, proactive is really taking some kind of action and not feeling like a victim. Because when we feel victimized, then we're stuck and we feel helpless. And helplessness leads us to feeling more depressed. And the other is having good friendships and social networks around us. You don't have to have many friends. You know, research shows if you have at least one good friend, that helps protect you against bullying and gives you outlets to talk with somebody and share and, you know, just be able to get the support that you need. The other is helping, asking for help when you need it, because we're not able to do everything by ourselves. But the other side of that coin is also giving help. When we help others, that helps us become more resilient because we're doing something, again, active, as well as controlling our moods and understanding, you know, what we can do to cope. Parents can really help by having high expectations, but that are realistic. So I think you can hold the bar high, but you have to be realistic about it, and you have to also be warm with your child and sort of get your kids' strengths as well as maybe some things that they struggle with. And then, of course, community is really important, you know, whether it's a faith-based community you participate in or a sports community that you participate in. But, you know, having sort of a larger body around you that can help bolster you when you need it.
I've been speaking with Dr. Mary Alvord, psychologist and clinical fellow with the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. Her nonprofit is called Resilience Across Borders. More info at wmpr.org/where we live. Dr. Alvord, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye-bye.
This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up, we'll hear from young people about the pressures they face and talk with a clinician and a guidance counselor about ways to help young people navigate stress. Do you have a son or daughter who's struggling to balance school with other facets of their life? Do you think he or she faces more pressure than when you were an adolescent or young adult? You can join our conversation. The number 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today we're talking about the stress and anxiety that young people feel between school, fitting in, coming into your own. It's a challenge for teens and their parents to figure it all out. WMPR intern Panina Beattie is a college student today, but she shared with us some of the pressures she experienced during high school. Here's an essay she produced for today's show.
The bus drops me off at 5:30 p.m. outside my house. I'm exhausted after a long school day. Jewish studies in the morning and secular in the afternoon. As soon as I walk through the door, I crash. Somehow my sleeping schedule has been disturbed by the long days in class, late night studying, or another bout of insomnia from the night before. I eat dinner and I'm asleep by 7. Most days I have at least an hour and a half worth of homework, so I set my alarm for 5 in the morning, sometimes earlier, to get it done. That's the schedule. Of course, only if I'm being responsible. But I'm 16. Responsibility is lame. My priorities are clouded by more demanding issues like checking Facebook. Are my friends all hanging out without me? Is that boy I like there too? Does anyone really like me? I watch TV to distract myself and fall asleep on the couch, shirking responsibility, and forgetting to set my alarm for 5. I participate in class discussions, but my teachers are disappointed with my homework, or lack thereof. If I only put in more effort, I could be an A student. I want to go to Columbia, I say. My teachers scoff at me. You're certainly smart enough, they say, but you just don't have the grades. I don't take them seriously, and I send in my application anyway. It comes as little surprise to everyone but me that I don't get in. I'm disappointed. I compare myself to my peers, and I feel like a failure. I'm expected to follow a traditional path to adulthood. If you don't get into the right college, there's something wrong. If you don't graduate in 4 years, there's something wrong. If you don't go right to college, or if, God forbid, you don't go to college at all, there is something very wrong.
That was WNPR intern Panita Beattie, who pitched the show, focusing on the pressures and expectations on young people today. Panita eventually found a path that worked for her, but getting to that point can take some time. Did her story resonate with you? Are you a parent of a child who's struggling with anxiety or depression? You can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. As always, find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Now, for more on what's leading to this heightened feeling of anxiety among young people and what to do about it, joining me now in studio is Dr. Maria LaRusso. She's assistant professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UConn, and her research focuses on child and adolescent social and emotional development. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Also in studio with me is Todd Dyer, director of school counseling at Avon High School and member of the board of directors for the Connecticut School Counselors Association. Todd, welcome to Where We Live.
Thank you.
I'll start with Maria. I mentioned that your research focuses on youth risk behavior. So tell us about what's going on with adolescents these days in terms of development and how it might be leading, what are the factors leading to these feelings of anxiety?
Well, one of the things that we know now that we didn't know as well decades before is that adolescence is this new period of brain development. And so we don't see the kind of brain plasticity and maturation of this level since the ages 1 to 3, so 0 to 3. And so given kind of what adolescents are going through in terms of changes in their cognition, changes in their ability to think more abstractly, and it's that the brain is developing more rapidly than their experiences to sort of match and kind of work with that new level of more complex thinking and problem solving and strategizing. And so often adolescents are trying to make sense of a world that is complex, including their own social worlds, their academic spaces, the larger world, but at the same time, they're still immature. They're still trying to figure things out. They still don't have the level of development that they need to make consistently responsible decisions, to regulate their emotions, to have perspective on problems that occur and sort of how they may not be a problem that's going to follow them throughout the rest of their lives. And so it's an intense time of development. There's so much going on. And at the same time, there are many pressures, academic pressures, social pressures. And so typically we do see it as a period of intense change and growth. And there are many ways in which that leads to lots of positive outcomes, but there can be challenges on the way.
When we think about this latest generation, I think the term is Generation Z, but when we think about the things that are in their lives that maybe, you know, I didn't grow up with in the 80s or my parents didn't grow up with, how does that, I guess, further exacerbate the challenges that adolescents have to figure out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Some things are still the same, right? I mean, there are certain ways in which adolescents are still figuring out their sense of self and their identity. They're still dealing with peer pressures and, pressures with parents and how to sort of manage their more sophisticated understanding of relationships. And but at the same time, you know, we definitely see with social media and the kinds of things that they're exposed to, and the level of exposure that for the self-scrutiny that is typical of adolescence and the social comparison, there's a lot more in their faces in terms of what they feel like they should be, should look like, should be achieving. And adults can have, although not all adults, but adults can have a little more perspective on, you know, that what you see on Instagram and Facebook is a very polished version of people's lives. And, you know, but adolescents are really struggling to sort of have an image that matches many images of perfection that they're seeing all the time.
You can join our conversation here on Where We Live, the number 860-275-7266. We just brought up social media. I wanted to take this call from Key, who's calling from Otis, Massachusetts. Key, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So what's your question or comment related to what we're talking about today?
So as someone who's 22 and growing up in a space where I was able to be heard by my parents and taken seriously, there's this dynamic between the development of image, which the previous woman who was speaking just spoke about, which is, you know, how do we grow up with this idea of perfection in a world where success is changing, specifically in the U.S., especially in a culture where, you know, it's the idea of success, you know, at least on social media, is all about having the perfect image, having beautiful makeup, having, you know, this is at least what I grew up with and saw. But as someone who was able to speak to my mother openly about my development, she talked a lot about, like, coming forward and speaking your truth and speaking to such as, like, mental illness, you know, growing up with anxiety or ADHD, being able to speak to that and saying that is a part of your image and that is not something that is to be hated or something that you can't speak about. And, you know, so that gave me a lot of ideas about what are opportunities I have access to and what are my ideas of success, and that, you know, having various aspects to my identity is not a wrong thing, because, you know, a lot of young people, Generation Z especially, I speak to, do not think they can ever achieve opportunities because they don't think they have the right type of success, which is a perfect image, which is what she was speaking about earlier.
Key, can I ask when you were able to make this realization, like how long it took for you to get to that point?
Yeah, so, it, you know, after I hit 16 and I went through a lot of series of, you know, changes in my life, I think around 18, 20, you know, 20, that time frame when I had to jump out of high school and go into college, and couldn't even get into private college, but actually went to community college and transferred. And having to accept that and consider that a valid academic journey was really when I...
Oh, Key, are you still there? Oh, I think we lost Key, but we appreciate you sharing a bit of your story and just your perspective on social media today here on Where We Live. In studio with me is Dr. Maria LaRusso, assistant professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UConn. Also, Todd Dyer, director of school counseling at Avon High School and a member of the board of directors for the Connecticut School Counselors Association. You can join us, too, 860-275-7266. Todd, you work within a high school, so when we're talking about the pressures on young people today, what are they?
So I think, you know, I would go off of what Maria said, that the changes that have happened in the last few decades from the school perspective, and definitely for middle schoolers, high schoolers, have, you know, we've had all the same pressures that were there years ago. But in addition to that, I think the challenges with social media, the recognition of mental health needs, and the competitiveness of our society really have pushed kids to really have a lot of stress and anxiety. You know, at our schools, many people see that stress and anxiety, and school counselors are at the center of that conversation in many schools, helping kids understand what's going on and recognize strategies to try and deal with that. And I think, you know, when we look at social media as one of the key factors, the change there in the last few decades has been that there's a constant feedback loop from the social media that kids are seeing on a regular basis, And it really is always there. Like, it's one of the things that is just, you know, constant in their lives. You know, before they would look at maybe a mirror and you'd see that outward image. Now, when you're seeing social media, you're doing a comparison of what's happening with your friends. Am I part of that conversation? You know, what is going on? Where are the parties? What are people doing? And am I measuring up with those other individuals? And so there's this constant feedback loop that comes from social media that I think adds to that pressure. There's also the societal pressures. And as college has gotten more competitive, I think many kids have tried to ramp up their resumes of activities. And there's this feeling that you've got to be involved in everything and be at the highest level to be able to remain competitive as you get to that ultimate goal, and I put that in quotes, of what societal's expectation is to that college and then that career. And I really like the feedback we've heard so far about the essay and also from the caller in, that there's a variety of ways to get to that end goal. And I think that's a conversation for us in the schools to really be trying to get young people to understand that there's more than one way to meet that end, and that if you don't meet the end right away, that's okay. You know, that you can be okay with where you're at, and that sort of understanding yourself and where you fit into that next step.
You mentioned the constant feedback loop, but also when students see that they feel like they have to do more and more to get into college. Where is that coming from? Is that their own realizations when they see what their peers are doing, or does that also come from stress from home, from the parents who say, you know, you need to get certain grades, we want you to get to a certain school? I'm just curious how you're able to talk with students about balancing those pressures and expectations.
Right. And I think, you know, school counselors are at the heart of that conversation with their students and trying to help them, you know, build a rigorous experience in high school, but also balance that rigorous experience in a way that hopefully you can manage stress and the anxiety of it. I do think, you know, there's multi-factors that weigh on students as they're going through their lives. And a lot of times it's just trying to get through the day-to-day of how do I fit in? How do I become who I'm going to be? You know, figuring out what makes sense to me and then look at those next steps. But definitely a lot of teenagers that I've worked with are dealing with the societal pressures. So this, what is the norm? What is the ideal? Pressures from home, pressures from their friends, and also pressures from, you know, the school itself. There's often a culture within their own school system that sort of leads them to that next step. And, you know, I think success as we define it is really hopefully individualized. And, I think in our work with students, we try and help them understand their successes, their strengths, their interests, and their value as it relates to their future goals, and not that the future goals define them, but that they are going to define their futures.
You can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. Taylor's calling from Ellington. Taylor, welcome to our show.
Hello.
I understand you're a freshman at UConn. Tell us about, did you ever feel anxious or a lot of stress in high school, and did that carry over when you enrolled as a student at UConn?
Yeah, so definitely. In high school, I took a lot of the advanced placement classes, which basically just mimic the college-level classes, and they give you the credit for those courses. Should you do really well in the classes. And I think that definitely that was a huge adjustment for me, because it's not like you're going to class and the teacher's giving you everything that you need. The teacher's giving you a small bit of what you need, and then the rest you kind of have to take home and work with yourself. You might have to teach yourself a chapter. So I think that was definitely a huge adjustment for me. And then going into college, even though it was kind of stressful, I think it was helpful at the same time, because I already kind of had those skills to be able to go home and teach myself a chapter or watch videos or study on my own and kind of deal with it myself instead of like the teacher like holding your hand as they may in other classes.
That's good that you had that support system, but I'm wondering when you see other freshmen, whether it's in your dorm or in your classes, if they're under stress, do they know where to go to get help, Taylor?
So a lot of the time UConn is actually very good with counseling and mental health services, which is located, it's I don't know if you're familiar with the UConn campus, but it's located kind of in the center of campus, and basically they'll always be open to take student concerns if a student has depression, if they're feeling anxious. We also have a lot of other organizations at the university. I know that the UConn Police Department does something called Study Break with a Cop and Coffee with a Cop, And what those are is that during finals week and really any time, you could go and visit and sit down and talk to them and take a break from your finals. And so I think that that facilitates kind of a sense of community within both the administrators at the university and also the students to try to get them to get the help they need. But I think that definitely, I know a lot of students, and I know, I don't remember who was talking prior to me, about how social media can impact a lot of college freshmen. Going in, I was very overwhelmed with how large UConn was because it's on upwards of, you know, 30,000 students. And I would always see, I would go on my Instagram and I'd see all my freshman friends having fun, you know, going out to parties, joining sororities and whatnot. And I often sat there thinking like, oh my gosh, am I not doing enough? Am I not having as much fun as them? And it really can become toxic if you forget that social media is kind of a highlight reel. It's only really what people want you to see. You're not seeing, you know, the breakdowns that they're having over a biology test at 11 o'clock at night. You know, it's nothing like that.
Well, Taylor, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well in school and that there are supports in place. Thanks for joining us today. And you can join us, 2860-275-7266. I wanted to go back to one of my studio guests, Dr. Maria LaRusso, assistant professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UConn. Maria, we heard Taylor mention that she has had supports in place when she was in high school. She feels like she can really navigate now that she's transitioned to a college freshman. But there's this statistic from the American College Health Association. They do an annual survey of students. This was reported by the New York Times. And in their latest survey of students, 62% of students felt overwhelmed, and that's growing each year, and that anxiety has overtaken depression. And so I'm wondering, in terms of what kind of services or supports are being developed as we see that number rising.
Yeah, we are seeing levels of anxiety that are peaking right now for adolescents. And so it's on the radar of schools. It's on the radar of researchers, parents. So I think part of what we need to be focused on is that we can get really caught up in schools, and especially high schools, on the academic achievement indicators and the goals for academic achievement and college readiness and all of those things. But part of college readiness, or part of readiness for moving toward adulthood, is really based in more non-academic skills. So emotion regulation, self-awareness, social awareness, the kinds of skills that are part of social-emotional learning and development, and that we tend to see a lot of programs in elementary schools that are focused on giving kids these kinds of skills and supports and coping strategies. But we see less of those programs in middle and high school. And even from a research perspective, we know less about what works at those ages than we know about the effectiveness of programs for younger children. And so so we want to be thinking about how can we be developing these other important competencies of adolescents, because those are the competencies that allow them to manage stress, to bounce back, to be resilient, to keep in perspective what's really important in their lives.
That's an important point. And Jennifer, who's calling from New Haven, that's something that you're also working on, is teaching college students how to manage stress?
Yes. So, So many things that people are saying are part of the bigger, what I call the palette that I introduce to my students. One of the biggest things is just having them understand what stress is, you know, this idea of positive and negative stress, and can they even identify it? Do they even know about it? Because I really believe that when you have awareness, it's very helpful. Then you could say, oh, that's where that comes from. And so I spend, you know, my semesters just helping develop that awareness and then giving them experiential tools so that they can have choices at the end of the semester. Oh, I'm having palpitations. Oh, I can do this mindfulness exercise. Or, oh, I need to go dance. Or, oh, I didn't sleep last night. So I'm seeing every semester at the beginning, like, people look kind of shell-shocked. And then at the end, you know, they're more relaxed and they have creative choices. And, you know, of course, it's for all of us. But within the, you know, stress management class, that's what they're looking for.
Well, thank you for your call, Jennifer, again from New Haven. I wanted to go back to Todd Dyer, who's director of school counseling at Avon High School and a member of the board of directors for the Connecticut School Counselors Association. Jennifer, the caller mentioned mindfulness. Is this something that high school students are learning today?
So I think as part of CISCA's mission, you know, we're working hard to helps school counselors in Connecticut build comprehensive programs and make sure they're implemented systematically. And as part of that, we're looking at social-emotional learning, and that has become a much more current topic over the last few decades. And more of our research and understanding in the human relations fields, understanding that those programs can really build skills, give kids strategies to deal with the stress and learn how to balance those stresses in life with a healthy lifestyle. And understanding in the teenage years, because there's such hyper-focus in those years on themselves, on what's going on, what are the stressors that they have on board. And I think working with classroom lessons, working with small groups and individual supports with their school counselors and school systems can really help balance that out and put it into perspective, because there are a whole variety of stressors, you know, learning to fit in, learning to figure out who I'm going to be, you know, where do I make sense with life? And I think, you know, some schools that I've worked with, one of my friends, they've just put in a yoga room. And, you know, that bringing those into the high school experience, you know, that's I think, where our next steps are going to be.
You mentioned a lot of stressors. I'm glad you brought that up, because so much of the show today is focusing on what we think of as, I guess, the typical stresses, like you said, fitting in, pressure to get certain grades as you conclude your high school career, like getting into a college. But for some students, and we know this no matter if they live in a town of privilege or not, there can be toxic stress at home. And so how do you, I guess, address that as well, Todd?
So I think a big part of our work is trying to get kids to understand their strengths and then trying to find people that they can connect with, their support network, whether it be people at school, whether it be people in the community, you know, their own family. You know, I think many of our parents are also dealing with the stress of their lives. And I think it's really important for parents to remember that they need to take that time to spend with their teenagers, because they are their number one supports. You know, in many of the surveys that we implemented, we saw that come back time and time again, that kids are looking for their parents or family members to be that sounding board. Not that their friends aren't there, and I think a lot of parents see their teenagers sort of moving toward their friends as their core focus, their circle of friends, but also that the understanding needs to stay there, that parents are still going to be key point in their life. And I think for a lot of teenagers, if those supports aren't there, then building that network of support within their schools, within their communities is also really important.
Today we're talking about the pressure on young people. In studio with me, Todd Dyer, Director of School Counseling at Avon High School and member of the Board of Directors for the Connecticut School Counselors Association, and Dr. Maria LaRusso, Assistant Professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UConn. We're getting a couple of tweets. Marjorie writes, "We're living through this at the very moment. Our daughter, a Berklee College of Music student, is withdrawing as we speak because the mental illness has gotten in the way and there's no way forward at the moment." I wanted Maria to address what Marjorie's saying about this low point that her daughter's experiencing. What are some you know, places or suggestions for where she can go for help?
Well, there's always therapy and other psychological services. Often, it's when even whether it's children or adolescents, it's ideal to find someone who has a family focus, who will work with both the parents and the child or adolescent. And, you know, a lot of the callers have been really talking about college age. And, you know, when we talk about adolescence, really today, adolescence has become a very extended period. It's much longer than it was decades earlier. And we know that a lot of youth are continuing to get through the different developmental processes well into their early to mid-20s. And so parents are really key in that process all the way through there. Even though adolescents start to pull away, need more autonomy, at the same time, they really need those family connections. And so there are supports that are available for young people, but that also involve the family and are able to help the family figure out how to be the support system that those young people need.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We're going to continue our discussion right after the break, and you can join us too, 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Next Thursday, join me at Grace Farms in New Canaan, Connecticut for a discussion about the global refugee crisis. Panelists will be from the Connecticut Institute for Refugees and Immigrants and Save the Children U.S., talking about displacement as well as more on the resettlement process. You can learn more at CIRICT.org. We hope to see you there. Now, today we're talking about the stress young people are under today. My guests in studio, Todd Dyer, Director of School Counseling at Avon High School, and Dr. Maria LaRusso, Assistant Professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UConn. And we were thinking about, you know, what can help kids do better in school and balance their schedules. And one of the things that comes up is starting school a little later in the morning so that kids can actually sleep. This evening, the West Hartford School Board will be voting on whether to shift the school schedule. Joining us for just a couple of minutes to talk about this is Cheryl Greenberg, who's chair of West Hartford's Board of Education. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us, where did the idea come from to shift the day in West Hartford, and how much of a shift are we talking about?
Well, the idea actually has been around for more than 10 years, but the most recent incarnation came from a group of parents and teachers who asked the board if we would address the question of later school start times for the sake of student health, both mental and physical. And the superintendent organized a committee that was made up of parents and teachers and administrators and coaches, et cetera, so stakeholders, parents, to investigate. And they spent about a year looking at all the different questions from transportation to athletics to the science. And then they came forward with a couple of, proposal. And they gave a pro and con list. And then we asked for specific proposals to specific times to look at, and then chose among those times. And so the current debate is high school would start at 8:10, middle school would start at 7:40 or 7:45, and elementary school would start at 8:40.
And how would you characterize the debate in the town of West Hartford, Cheryl? Is there consensus for this change? And what's the flip side of some concerns about shifting the time?
Yeah, no, there's no consensus at all. It's quite contentious. There are people who feel extremely strongly on both sides. Most of the people who are in support acknowledge the science and talk about their own struggles or their children's struggles with depression or exhaustion or whatever, or their own experience elsewhere with later start times. The people who oppose it generally talk about the disruption to families with the changing times, potential transportation costs. They're dismayed, as indeed are we, about the possibility of moving middle school earlier, about athletics issues, things like that.
Well, that's again Cheryl Greenberg, who's chair of West Hartford's Board of Education. Cheryl, before you go, there is that Hartford Current story that just looked at some of the behind-the-scenes advocacy and sharing of information, and it focused on you and how you emailed a certain friend and advocate for later to start time. Did you want to address that at all? Do you think that you handled it appropriately?
Well, I tried very hard to be balanced in my position as chair, to not take a position either way, but I never pretended that I wasn't an advocate in my private life as an individual. I think the article completely mischaracterized and took out of context several of the comments, and I'm trying to reach out to some of the people that were named to apologize to them for that. It was not intended, but that's what happened. And I do apologize for any straying beyond the boundaries between advocacy and impartiality that I did, and I take full responsibility for.
Well, Cheryl Greenberg, thank you for joining us just for a few minutes to talk about this a possible vote tonight between for the West Hartford School Board looking at a later start time. And I wanted to go back to our in-studio guest because I wanted to find out a little bit more about the science. What does the science tell us about how much sleep do adolescents need? I'll start with you again, Dr. Maria LaRusso from UConn.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that we know, and it's probably no coincidence, that alongside high levels of anxiety in adolescents, we also have adolescents who are chronically sleep deprived. And the science supporting later school times for adolescents is really strong. The studies that have followed school districts that have changed to later start times have seen positive impacts in a very broad range of areas. So you not only see reductions in tardiness, reductions in absenteeism, you see improvements in academic achievement, reductions in anxiety, reductions in substance abuse, general improvements in mental health and well-being. As someone who does research on looking at programs and interventions in school that are supposed to improve adolescents' social and behavioral development, I've never seen anything that consistently has impact on such a broad range of outcomes. And so the science is very strong supporting that.
And Todd, again, you're with Avon High School as director of school counseling. In your career, have you worked or seen the impact of later start times on student performance and functioning?
So I know that there's a lot of research out there to the effect that says later start times are helpful for teenagers. I guess my perspective is slightly different. I think it's a cultural standpoint, and kids definitely need at least 8 hours of sleep, the teenage years, especially because they're growing and developing. But I think a lot of our teenagers nowadays, especially with access to social media, to online content, they stay up late. And so I think part of it is adjusting your schedules. And so if kids are staying up till 10:30, 11, yeah, they're going to have a tough time getting up and going to school at 7 o'clock or 7:15. The last two schools that I've worked at, we've had start times a little bit later, so 8 o'clock and 7:40. And I think those times are late enough to allow a student to get in, and still have a full day and then have the after-school activities. Because there's definitely pros and cons to this argument, as we already heard from our call-in guests. And those issues can really impact what happens after school, the family, and a lot of the extracurricular activities. So if you push the school day later, that's going to sort of have a trickle-down effect. Hopefully, again, I do feel it goes back to the routines. Mm-hmm. And I've seen kids that have been able to manage that routine well and get to bed at a disciplined time.
Todd, you're also a board of directors for the Connecticut School Counselors Association. We touched on this just a little bit earlier, but depending on someone's gender, their ethnicity, their socioeconomic background, the pressures on them can vary. And I'm just wondering, from a collective approach statewide, are school districts adapting to the student populations they have?
So I think one of the things I've seen in the last probably 10 years, but definitely 15, 20 years, is that, we as educators, we as school counselors, I think mental health professionals, we've become much more aware of the issues that are on board and how they impact individuals' growth and development. And I think programs have been put in place to respond to that. And, definitely much more open in our society now about talking about mental health and the supports that are needed. It's not stigmatized as much. And I think, people are more open to getting the help when needed. And that's a positive. That's going to lead us toward the next step where it becomes okay to talk about the issues that students are dealing with and individuals are dealing with.
Well, again, I want to thank Todd Dyer, Director of School Counseling at Avon High School. Todd, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Also, Dr. Maria LaRusso, Assistant Professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UConn. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Again, today's show produced by WMPR intern Panina Beatty. Also, thanks to Lydia Brown and Kion Wolf. And also, WMPR intern Phil Geolopsis did great work for us during his fall internship. Today's his last day. Phil, thanks for your hard work. And to our listeners as well, thanks for joining in on the conversation. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Thanks for listening.